The 5 Leadership Questions podcast is brought to you by Lifeway Leadership. Try our free app, available on all mobile platforms, for daily leadership content including blogs, webinars, and more. Visit myleadershippipeline.com/app or search Lifeway Leadership in your preferred app store.
Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I am your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins. Todd is the director of leadership here at Lifeway, and we also have Todd's boss, Eric Geiger, in the room with us today. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Do you have any greetings?
No, I can't. After Todd's got the epic.
I mean, I guess if we have too many, then it just becomes like a morning radio show where everybody needs a nickname, yeah. And it's all sound effects and gimmicks.
Mm. Yeah, that was fun. We had we had Acuff on, and he started going into a morning radio. The Zoo spot.
Yeah, that's it fits.
If you haven't listened to that episode, go back and
so we can all, we can only fit so many gimmicks in one studio. So Todd's got his, and the rest of us will play the straight man. We do want to, before we dive into our topic of the day, we want to highlight our sponsor, who is Southeastern Seminary. We partner with Southeastern on a lot of stuff. On Ministry Grid, which is our church leadership training platform, we have a number of video courses from them that we call MOOCs, Massive Open Online Classes. You can get all of that content there. So Tony Marino on preaching, theology and culture, a number of other things. But one specific thing that we want to highlight for them is they do preview days. So if you are considering attending Southeastern or just hearing about it now and want to find out more, they have one coming up on September 29th, which is still, from the time of recording this, it's still several weeks away. So you'll have plenty of time. They only cost $20 a person, and you'll be able to visit with faculty, get a tour of the campus, sit in on some classes, get a full kind of scope of what they do there. And one of the things that we love about Southeastern is their emphasis on the Great Commission. We had Danny Aiken on the podcast early on, so probably episode somewhere in the 20 and 30 range, maybe. And he emphasized that repeatedly. And then we had Bruce Ashford, who's their provost on, and he brought in some of the same things. And that is the theme of what they do. So they offer multiple master's degrees, MDiv programs, all of which are aimed at helping people in ministry make disciples and develop disciples. So that's the heartbeat of what they do. Very missions oriented.
And the drumbeat.
Man, it's for sure the heart. I spoke at Southeastern several years ago for a chapel service and kind of hung out in Dr. Aiken's office beforehand. It happened to be a week where prospective students were mm-hmm. there. And so he sat down, answered questions from every single student, just had this love for these students. And he said, listen, here's what's going to happen if you come here. You are going to get a heart for the world. You're mm-hmm. going to get a heart for the nations. You're going to get a heart for the word and theology. And so he doesn't want to just get half students. He wants to send students out mm-hmm. whose hearts bleed for the nations and for the glory of God and for the word of God. So you see it from
their grads. Like we interact with their grads all the time in pastorate and missions, and you see it.
Is look at hashtag I am going, and then you're going to see that. When I said the heartbeat and their drumbeat, is because a lot of people will give lip service to mm-hmm. Their vision or their passion or whatever. But
this is how they march.
This is how they march, and that is the drumbeat that is constantly
yeah.
That's constantly there. If you checked out I am going on social, hashtag I am going on social, you'll see pictures of people holding up a sign and saying, okay, this is my part. This mm-hmm. is where God is calling me, to go and do damage for the kingdom.
And yeah, they put out people doing damage for the kingdom who are high quality, and they do it all the time. So if you're interested,
and damage for the kingdom and damage to the kingdom.
Right. Get your prepositions
yeah,
correct.
Right.
This is for, on behalf of. Their next preview day, September 29th, 2016, $20 a person. They're located in North Carolina, so that may be a long trip for you. If it is and you're still interested, they offer all sorts of distance ed opportunities. You can find out more at sebts.edu/5LQ. So that's Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary.edu/5LQ. We'll put that in the show notes. So if all of those letters are a little tough to jot down and remember, you can just click the link and jump right on over there. And then the other thing is, if you are considering applying and registering there, if you use the code 5LQ during your application process, you will actually get a discount on those application fees. So 5LQ is the thing to remember, sebts.edu/5LQ. Use the code 5LQ when applying if you're interested in going there, and you will get a discount. Now, the topic of the day. We are going to talk about lying. Actually, we're going to talk about lies that leaders believe. We did an episode like this with Carrie Newhoff a little while back and took on five lies that leaders believe and had such a good time and dug into kind of so many leadership insights that we thought we would do it again with Eric. So we have five lies that leaders believe, and those will be our five questions. More. And the question that applies to each of these is, why do leaders believe them, mm-hmm. and what can they do about it? So
these are great. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, I like where this one's going. I think this will be a good conversation. So the first lie that we see leaders believing is everything depends on me. Lie number one. Everything depends on me. So why do leaders believe that? And then what can they do about it?
Well, in some sense, leaders believe that lie because of pride.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but I'm going to try to be, like, if I'm being defensive of a leader and saying, man, here's how, unfortunately, you could have believed that lie. Here's how you could have been deceived. Leaders are put in roles at times because they've executed. They carry a big sense of responsibility. They've been affirmed for that. Everything I've handed you, you do well, you own it, you care for it. And so a leader can have heard that, have been affirmed for those things, mm-hmm. then put in a position, and then the positive quickly becomes a negative. The sense of responsibility, the sense of stewardship and ownership then can transition from things that leader's been affirmed to then to very, very destructive leadership, where the leader actually believes the lie and is deceived that this all depends on me.
And, I mean, too, it's we've seen that picture drawn for us, mm-hmm. again and again and again, especially in the last generation or two, where you had leadership and organizational structure as almost a command and tell.
Yeah.
Versus teach and train or model and coach, where we currently are, hopefully, where we currently are. So, you know, I think that's a big piece of it. If everything depends on you, you're doing it wrong, and you haven't had you haven't been converted to development. Meaning,
yeah,
you know, take a look at how you spend your time in your job, and if a lot of that is doing and not developing, then you know that at least you may say you don't believe this, but this is a lie you believe because you're not delegating and yeah. developing others. So you need to really understand that your job as a leader is not to do everything. It really is that whole, the heartbeat you need to have is equipping and developing, because your legacy is not yours.
Yeah.
Your legacy is what is done through other people.
I think there's an innocent reason some leaders believe this, and that's because they started really small. And so if you start a business,
you are your only employee.
Yeah. Yeah. And no, so everything does depend on you.
That goes back to pipeline.
You did payroll, you did sales, you did the graphic art.
Yeah, you did customer service, you were the janitor, you were everything.
You passed out the brochures and mailboxes in the neighborhood, and then it's grown a bit. You can still have that sense of operating at that level.
Yeah, your hands are down in the details. And so you still feel the pressure that mm-hmm. everything depends on you, because you didn't. At some point, you have to make the difficult transition, like Todd said, into development. Now, which is why when you start something, church, business, I mean, this could be true for a church planner. Yeah. It could be true for a tech startup. You have to start with development in mind, thinking, when I can make hires, I need to begin developing and handing off.
Well, if you look at pipeline, which is the underlying philosophy of what we do, you're moving from being an individual contributor or leading self. So whether you work at a church or not at a church, at a business, most of the time you enter an organization leading self. And if you do a good job there and you know are responsible, as Eric said, and you're not a sociopath, then eventually you're probably going to lead others. Mm-hmm. And the transition, the mind shift that has to take place there from leading self to leading others is often missed.
I think it's fascinating that you're saying if you're in a place and you're not a sociopath, in time, you'll actually be leading others. But you know, he's right. Yeah. If you actually show up at a spot and are faithful,
responsible,
and not a sociopath,
you have a good attitude.
I just don't think you've ever put that on a questionnaire of any time you've
not
handed
a
responsibility.
Sociopath.
Have you been faithful? Yes. Are you a sociopath? No. Okay, great. Here's some more
if
responsibility.
You've been faithful and have emotional intelligence.
That's true.
There you go. But yeah, we should probably move on.
Let's just leave sociopaths behind. Actually, this next one may include some sociopathology as well. Quick word on some of these. We borrowed some of these from Dan Rockwell. He did a blog post about some falsehoods that leaders believe in some different things. So we reframed some of those. So if you read his blog and these sound familiar, it was from like 2 or 3 years ago. We borrowed and want to give credit where credit is due. He's been on the podcast a couple times.
2 or 3 times.
So it's a great guest. The Leadership Freak blog is where we were inspired for some of these and want to give credit to him before we move forward. So anyway, second lie.
But real quickly, on number one, yes. We talked about why they lead it, but what can be done? What can be done to solve it?
That is important. Yes.
Let me just hit it real fast before we go to number two, because I know we want to get to all of them. But I think what can be done, if you think everything depends on you, here's how you solve it. You look to the future.
Mm-hmm.
You look to the future and realize that one day I'm not going to be in this role. And so more than just the work getting done, I need to have people developed. And so if you imagine your last day in your role, if all you've done is accomplish the work, then that work walks out with you.
Yeah, it stops the moment you stop.
Stops. Yeah. So look to the future. All right, now number two.
And then one other thing, look around at the other leaders who have not, who believe this lie. Look around at other leaders who have claimed responsibility for everything, and there is a high rate of crash and burn, or just crash and burn once they leave. They may have done a good job, but once they're done, they're done. So you can see evidence of this everywhere.
Yeah, it's good.
Second lie. People will forget my outbursts, tantrums, and rudeness. Mm. So basically, it's okay. I can get away with it. People will forget.
Here, the reason I think people believe this lie is, sadly, we've idolized in our culture leaders like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you read, for example, two modern-day leaders that are just exhorted for their genius leadership is Steve Jobs and Jeff Bezos. But if you read the biographies of both of those guys, not autobiographies, but biographies.
Yeah, so I haven't read the Bezos one, but Walter Isaacson did the Jobs one, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, Isaacson and Jobs, and then a guy named Stone did the Everything Store, the biography of Jeff Bezos. And you really find out when you read both of those, if you read them close together, you're like, these are very, very similar guys.
Yeah.
And they, both of them, had a very outburst of anger, very talked very down to B, quote unquote, B players or average players in their company. Where's the A team? Where's the A team? Bring the A team in here. This is whatever. I mean, just criticizing things very, very relentlessly.
You see the same thing when you read Roland Lazenby's biography of Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's not a business leader, but clearly a leader in his field, and he had the exact same personality, and I think sociopath might be a fitting description for some of these guys.
So, you read those biographies, you read a blog, see an article online. We have lifted up leaders and have looked at their rudeness, their outbursts, their tantrums as blemishes on their record, but not diminishing their overall leadership.
Well, it's an ends justifies the means situation. Because Steve Jobs was a genius, however he arrived at his conclusion was an acceptable process. Because Michael Jordan won 6 championships, however he got there was acceptable. And so results matter more than character.
Yes.
And because that's the framework of things, it's easy to believe, oh, this will be forgotten because it will oftentimes when credit is handed out.
And that's why leaders believe that lie, because they've seen models where that lie has the outbursts have been diminished in light of the overall. But I'd say for Christian leaders that must not be so. If you're a Christian leading in any field of life,
but it's just as true in the church. I mean, we spend enough time with churches and church leaders, you hear enough stories, you see enough ugly, we've all been on church staffs or been on church leadership teams, you know that this is true at the church level as well, where there are semi-tyrannical leaders who can treat people very badly and just sort of assume that they can walk away from that and everything is like no harm done. So I guess the question, I think on this one, there's an additional sub question, which is what is the actual effect of that on people? Thinking specifically in the church,
a performance-based culture with no grace, which is the opposite of what the church should be, which isn't performance-based, but it's we've received grace. Mm-hmm. Not that we've earned grace.
And I think, and then the last question is what can leaders do about this? So they're believing the lie. I mean, I think there's just sort of this freedom to get away with stuff.
I keep cutting Todd off. He's like,
I want to say something.
He's Todd, about to have a tantrum.
He just gave me a stink eye. Go ahead, dude.
I'm working on an analogy in my brain, and I'm not sure that it works out. So I
always enjoy the analogies that come out of Kentucky. So let's roll with this.
If it has tobacco,
I'm not gonna do that one. I'm gonna talk about what you can do about it. So one of the big things you can do about it is if you do this, if you have an outburst, a tantrum, rudeness, you have to own it. Not only do you have to own it, you have to ask for forgiveness.
We have to recognize it first. I think sometimes leaders don't even realize that they had an outburst. They're just like, oh, I was expressing things passionately.
Are you guys using this to do an intervention on me?
But to be fair, Todd might. I don't recall you ever having any outburst towards me. But a lot of closed doors meetings with that guy.
Have I had an outburst towards you?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
tell the truth now.
Okay, so one of the things that we talk about on here occasionally, and you know, outside of here occasionally, is how to have healthy conflict.
Totally.
So some people would look at healthy conflict as an outburst,
and that's not true. Like, yeah.
No, that's how we move forward. That's how we get things done.
Here's what I'd say on what to do. I'm preaching this to myself. So, and this is for people in the kingdom, leadership in the kingdom of God, servanthood in the kingdom of God. Jesus said, if a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. So the reality is if we live in outburst, anger, pride, we really are, it may feel like we're accomplishing something, but in the end, it's going to be absolutely nothing. Even the things that we think were something, when all of eternity is revealed, it's going to be nothing. So if you think that you're accomplishing things by burst of anger, that's how I get the most out of my team, or that's how I really drive them to perform. In the end, all the things that you thought were something are going to be absolutely nothing anyway.
Yeah.
And so that to me is just like, man, that I got this one life to steward. I don't want it to be nothing.
And dovetailing with that, I think oftentimes those outbursts are an expression of stress or fear or anger, usually all of which are a lack of trust. So your outburst is an indication that you're not trusting your team and you're not trusting God. And so there is a sense of realizing God's hand at work, your place before him, you know, you're not as special as you think you are. So put more burden on him and less on your team and less on yourself, and the outburst will diminish. Third question, or third lie, is I am better at your work than you are, even though I hired you as an expert. So you think you're smarter than your team. That's the lie that leaders believe, even though you hired them to be good at their job.
Again, is pride.
I'm sorry, Barnabas.
It's pride. But I'm trying to think about how it could happen in a way. If I'm trying to take the defense of the leader, the leader can think, even though I hired this really smart person, no one cares as much as I care because I care so much. That's why. And I have the experience that this person doesn't have.
I'm thinking about this nonstop.
Even though that person is more skilled in this thing than I am, because they don't own it the way I own it, they don't really know.
And that's, I mean, you going back to the Steve Jobs.
It's a trust issue.
Yes. Yeah. Going back to the Steve Jobs example, there's elements of it there. You know, Apple hires some of the best in software, in design, different things, but he would meddle in people's work. And now, to be fair, he was really good at a lot of things, but he didn't trust them because this was his life, this was his identity, and he did care more about the work than anybody else, but probably to a fault. I think going the example I gave earlier of the startup is another example. There's a lot of leaders who say, oh, I used to do that. So you kind of overrate your own expertise. You know, oh, I did IT for a little while, so I know how to do IT. Yeah. So I'm going to meddle with the IT guys.
I read an article or a book on this.
Yeah, I did marketing. Oh, I did whatever. And yeah.
Exactly. And, I've seen that, man.
Dude, I've read a book.
Like, awesome. Yeah, I've been doing this for 10 years. No, so that's why leaders believe it. Now, what can a leader do about it? So if you find yourself, this is really it's a trust in micromanagement in terms of how it plays itself out.
I would say, if that's your issue, did you hire the right person in the first place?
If that's your issue, can you find anybody you think is the right person?
It's your problem one way or the other. Either you need to have more trust and better emotional intelligence about your knowing yourself and understanding your strengths and weaknesses and all that, or you didn't do due diligence in hiring the right person, and so you found yourself upside down. Either way, it's your problem. You have to deal with it.
But in that case, is it a lie that you are believing? Because you might actually be better at the job than they are.
That's true.
It's a valid question. If you find yourself regularly not being able to trust somebody, you may have hired the wrong person, but let's assume they're good at their job. Mm-hmm. So what is the leader's responsibility to make changes here?
Humility.
It always seems to come back to that.
This does. Humility. Just realizing that it goes back to question one, everything depends on me. And if I actually believe that, I'm limiting my influence. I'm limiting the influence of our organization. But really, more than that, my heart is not right.
When we did an episode a little while ago on delegation, and this is like anti-delegation, because if you are delegating well, you are entrusting somebody with something because of their, what were the things you listed in that episode, Eric? It was their competence, their commitment, their confidence. I think those are the main ones. So yeah, there's the delegative aspect.
That's an important thing to point out is what Eric just said about those two things being very connected. If you have a problem with everything depends on me, you're probably also going to have a problem with I'm better at your work than you are.
All right. Fourth lie. If I ignore it, it will go away. Why do leaders believe it, and what can they do about it?
People,
you can ignore this question, but it's not going away.
Question number five. I think people are really self-deceived here. We oftentimes some leaders want to avoid conflict or avoid the difficult conversation, and so they some kind of way via a means of self-deception convince themselves it will go away. But if you honestly just think with wisdom about the history of leading, it doesn't just go away. It doesn't go away. You're going to have to. It's only going to fester, likely, get worse, likely. And I'm not saying the Lord can't step in and completely solve a situation. I'm talking about if there's tension, if there's conflict, if there's sin, if there's issues of character, those just don't go away. You've got to have a conversation. So you can try to be an ostrich leader who sticks your head in the sand, but that doesn't change the reality above the surface that's happening while your head is in the sand.
Yeah. I mean, Todd mentioned healthy conflict a moment ago, and I think
that's the way things move forward.
I think a lot of this is the fear of conflict. If I ignore a difficult situation, it will go away. What I'm really saying is I'm afraid to confront a difficult situation, and so it's this fear of facing hard things and awkward things.
There's a way to address this that I've mentioned before, and you guys made fun of me, I think, if I remember correctly. But
I'm sure anything.
There's a good chance. Yeah, there's a real good chance.
But it's eat the frog.
Yeah, we've made fun of you for that one before.
And rightly so.
And that is, you know, just deal with it, man. It's a big, nasty, ugly thing that's not going to taste good.
Why frog?
Because can you think of anything nastier than eating a frog?
Yeah, but who has to eat a frog?
We all do. As leaders, you have to. There's stuff that you don't want to deal with. There's stuff that you want to stick your head in the sand.
How many be like eat your Brussels sprouts or something? Yeah. Like that's it's a thing that people actually eat.
Brussels sprouts are healthy. Like if I eat the Brussels sprouts, it's a necessary evil.
Yes, but I think a frog the frog would taste worse than Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, but the frog doesn't then in the end help me become. You need to change that analogy, bro.
I don't think so.
This again back to Kentucky analogies. And Todd has brought up chainsaws and Kevlar. That was in a team meeting. We've had gambling analogies. We've had tobacco analogies. We've had I don't even know what all eating frogs. Yeah, just all sorts of stuff.
From agriculture.
But you were making a point about eating the frog and healthy conflict.
Eating the frog is just what's that thing? You know, I wake up every day knowing that. What's the thing that I don't want to do the most? And going ahead and getting it done and knocking it out.
So in terms of what leaders can do about it, is this sort of just a willpower thing? I mean, a lot of the other ones that we've touched on have been a little bit more maybe spiritually and character oriented. We're talking humility and pride issues, those kinds of things. This seems like it's almost a matter of just courage and willpower to just do the hard thing.
Well, it's putting, you know, a framework in place or some type of construct in place that, you know, hey, every day I'm going to do the thing that I don't want to do the most or every Friday, whatever it is. And then, you know, like I try to on a regular basis say no to something new. Like, okay, it's the first of the month. What am I going to stop doing? What am I going to say no to? Things like that can really help push you forward. They sound cheesy, but, you know, it can really help you move forward.
I think another thing is almost recording, even if it's, you know, even if you have to write it down, recording the net result of doing the hard thing. It's not usually as bad as you think it's going to be.
That's good.
And so if you build a pattern of that over time, you just go, oh, I did this last Friday. Yeah. I can do it again today. And it'll be painful for a short amount of time. And then everything will actually be better in the end. Not always, but most of the time.
Good deal. Let's go to the fifth one.
All right. Fifth one. Fifth lie that leaders believe. This one will maybe be a little confession time, so you guys can decide
if
how to handle this.
If I didn't believe in this one, I wouldn't be doing this podcast today.
That's a good point.
I would have already left.
I am open to critique, correction, and criticism. Todd is clearly open. Well, some sort of those things, because we've been critiquing his analogies.
So you're saying
with some points.
You're saying that the lie is that leaders say that, but they aren't really.
Yeah, they think they are open to these things, but it is a lie because they are not actually open to these things. So I think this one's easy to understand why leaders believe it. It's a lack of self-awareness. But what can be done about it is a difficult.
Yeah, I think everyone wants to say that they are. But the reality is I don't think any of us are as open to it as we say that we are.
Yeah. I think a lot of times, and this is very much how I function. I think I am open to it, but if you come at me the wrong way, I realize just how quickly I'm not open to it.
Yeah.
So if you threw a criticism my way, like, "Hey, that was you didn't do a great job at that," I would be very defensive very fast.
Yeah.
If you came to me in just the right way, like it's the narrow door kind of idea. You have this really small door to walk through to critique me. Anything outside that, and I get defensive.
For me, it's a respect issue. Like, if you respectfully critique me, I'm going to respond a whole lot better than if you don't. If
I respectfully ask you not to talk about eating frogs anymore.
But you did that in front of a pretty large audience.
You did.
Shoot, did it wrong again.
There's a little difference, as opposed to if a brother sins against you. I'm not saying he sinned against you with frog legs, but
totally
but in principle.
I didn't say frog legs, the whole
go,
frog.
Go, oh gosh, it even worse.
then go
behind the door.
Apologies, Todd. Public apology for a public sin.
So I go back to, really quickly, I go back to, I think about, again, another cheesy thing that was at least helpful for me. You know, the whole idea of love and respect. The book that you go through talking about your marriage.
Yeah. Yep.
Because you have to start off believing that this is a good-willed person.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably no one in our life greater than our spouse that offers as much critique and correction often.
Your wife is awesome at that.
For you. She does that to you, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And smoggers.
She will totally correct me.
Honey, you probably shouldn't correct the pastor.
No, it's awesome. I love it.
No, that's so good for everybody else in the small group because it sort of de-deifies the pastor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's a good de-deifier. She's a sanctifying presence.
But no, but that whole idea of if I understand that she is a good-willed person who wants the best for me, who wants the best for, you know, us and our family, then I can much more readily receive that critique.
Yes. She's awesome.
I can much more readily receive that critique. So mm-hmm. if I have a team member or, you know, if another leader, if it's another peer or it's someone above me, all those things, if I know that they are a good-willed person with good intention, then that helps me take that a little bit better.
Yeah. We did an episode, I think it was with Brad Lominick, a few months ago on self-awareness. I would say if this is something you wonder about, am I doing a good job at this? Yep. Go listen. That episode can help sort of sort out some issues of self-awareness. We've talked a lot about emotional intelligence. Yep. That's a thematic thing in this. I think that's part of this in terms of how a leader can deal with it, because I think one of the things that I would like to be better at and hope to continue to grow in is the ability to receive criticism whether or not it's offered well. So, you know, if a critic has no leg to stand on, but they say something that has a seed of truth in it, am I humble enough am I listening closely enough to still get the seed of truth? That's a hard thing to do, but that's I think everybody benefits if I can do that.
Yeah. It's rather than dismissing it, saying what is true about this.
Yeah.
This critique.
Okay, I think
and owning whatever, even if it's
exactly, you know, instead of finding reasons to dismiss the critique, finding reasons to listen to it.
But also, I do want to be corrected and rebuked by the right people.
Yes.
And so, to me, the way to do that as a leader is to be sure that I'm surrounding myself with people who aren't impressed with me.
Mm-hmm. Like Amy Adkins.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's people who
it helps that y'all have known each other for 20 years.
They love me and are committed to me, but aren't like in awe of me. Mm-hmm. You know, not that anybody should be impressed with me.
Have the title of pastor or vice president, there is a certain amount of sort of reverence of the position that comes with it. And so you have to find people who are unimpressed with the title enough to say what is true in a kind way.
In a kind way, because you know they care about you and they care about the organization or the ministry. I think biblically of a couple of cases where clearly leaders surrounded themselves with people who were only impressed with them.
Mm-hmm.
So when David goes and gets Bathsheba, his servants said, David, she's married. Go get her anyway. There wasn't a context there where they could have said, David, when we said she's married, we're saying she's married because this is a foolish request.
Yeah. And then he doubled down by sending his general to go get her husband killed. And he also didn't ask why, didn't really pull. He just goes, okay, yes, if the king wants to.
And then you have Solomon's son, Rehoboam, which I sometimes have a hard time pronouncing Old Testament names, but when he became the leader, another leader from the north, Jeroboam, confronted him and said, "Hey, the people think that you're ruthless, and if you lighten the load, the people will follow you." The elders said, "Hey, that's what you should do. You should lighten the load.
Mm-hmm.
Speak a kind word to the people; they'll follow you." But Rehoboam did not surround him. Didn't listen to those guys. He listened to the people who he grew up with. So guys who were always impressed with him. Guys who weren't wise, and
the cronies,
and gave the opposite direction to the people. I'm gonna be harsher on you than my father was, and the kingdom split. So he listened to the wrong people. Now, obviously, God was sovereign and providential over all of that, and that was a prophecy that the kingdom would be divided,
But there's a leadership principle there that's real clear too. Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, God's sovereignty and our responsibility is an issue for another day, but we are responsible for our decisions, for our leadership, for those kinds of things, and so that's not the way to do it. All right, well, that wraps up the five lies that leaders believe, and hopefully we've said some helpful things. Maybe we've pricked a conscience or three. Maybe we've made fools out of ourselves by insulting Todd publicly.
Probably.
So apologies for that.
I'm sure that makes it all better.
That's
there,
right.
Marcus. That makes it all better.
A flippant apology always improves everything. Yeah. Yeah, the insincere apology.
Sorry, not sorry.
I'm sorry you feel that way, Todd. Before we sign
we'll
off, I want to highlight our sponsor again, Southeastern Seminary. We greatly appreciate having them support the podcast, and glad that we can partner with them and support them. Check out their next preview day, September 29th. To learn more, go to sebts.edu/5LQ. That link will be in the show notes. You can find it there. Southeastern Seminary, thank you for sponsoring. And listeners, thank you for tuning in. We greatly appreciate your support, your regular interactions with us, and always enjoy those. So thanks so much, and tune in next time.
Don't forget to try our free app on your phone or tablet. Just visit myleadershippipeline.com/app or search Lifeway Leadership in your preferred app store.